Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of the day for the 29th of Nisan. With gratitude to the OU, to Rabbi Jack Abramowitz, David Hochhauser, for their help in putting all these shirim online and available to you, let's start discussing Rabbi Chaim Halevi's response, mostly about buying cigarettes for a parent. It's actually a short response, but I was excited about hearing from Chaim David Halevi. I find his shivot really interesting and really useful. And so I tracked down several other responses that he mentions in the course of it, because these are all very short responses for reasons that we'll see in the course of the shivot. This is from Shut Aselech HaRav. Response Aselech HaRav, make yourself a teacher. Chelek Vav Siman Nun Chet, the sixth volume, the 58th response. So the question is, a father asks his son, or tells his son, to buy him cigarettes or cigars. It's cigarettes. The word is cigariot, and I thought to myself, I think cigar in Hebrew is cigar. So I think the plural of cigar in Hebrew is cigarim, and then of cigarettes, which are cigaria, would be cigariot. So you got a Hebrew lesson today, as well as perhaps maybe irresponsible. Let's see. Is the son allowed to buy the cigarettes for the father? And he writes, I'm verifying the beginning. He starts many of his tshuvot by verifying the day of the month that he received it. This particular instance, and it's rare in Aselech HaRav, in my experience, he gives the date of the year as well. This is a letter from the 29th of Nisan of Tavshin Dalet Mem, 1984. And interestingly, he includes in his letters a reassurance that I got your letter from X date, but he does not, as far as I can tell, date his own replies, which is kind of interesting to think about. Maybe he didn't put it in the book that way, I'm not sure. But in any case, so we're going to use it because we like to learn from Chaim David Halevi. We find him an interesting person, and therefore we're going to learn from it. So he says, and I couldn't answer until now because I was very busy, and I'm only going to answer you very briefly. So he says, first, turns out the letter wasn't only about that question, even though that's the heading given to the question. He had also asked him about going up to Har HaBayit. There is some pretty clear consensus among halachic authorities that the place we stop, that Kotel HaMa'ariv, the Western Wall, is not the last place that Jews can halachically go without even getting into any halachic problem whatsoever. Meaning that on Har HaBayit itself, the actual Temple Mount, what is halachically the Temple Mount, one can't go to unless they get ritually pure in certain various ways, that, or there are places beyond which, right? You can go, you might be able to go up on Har HaBayit, but not into where the old Beit HaMikdash used to have been. So all questions of where you can go with what levels of ritual impurity, because we cannot get rid of Tumat Mate today. We don't have Parah Aduma water. We don't have water which was mixed in with the ashes of a red heifer that was sacrificed in the proper way. All the things that we would need in order to be able to go into the other, into the more kodosh, more the more sanctified parts. But there are places on, it might even be on Har HaBayit itself, and what would technically be Har HaBayit, that even somebody who's still Tamei Mate is allowed to go. In any case, there are places where you, just by going to mikvah, one would clearly be allowed to go. There are places where it's questionable. There are places where we're clearly not allowed to go. So, but the places where we are allowed to go, we generally don't go today because of a political issue with the Israeli government having made an agreement with the Muslim powers that control Har HaBayit, to whom the Israelis ceded control of that top of the Temple Mount for various reasons, whatever the reasons were, 67, and it happens to be that today, the halacha is that while tour groups can go, there's no Jewish praying allowed up on Har HaBayit, on any part of Har HaBayit. It turns out that even in 1984, Chaim David Halevi was of the opinion that we should go to Har HaBayit if we can, and we should pray there as much as we can. And he says he doesn't have to worry about zilzul, that people will mistreat it, for reasons he said I wrote in a previous letter. And he says if we start worrying about that stuff, then there will be no end to it. So that previous letter that he refers to, as far as I can tell, is Shut Aselech HaRav, Chelek Vav, same volume, Siman Pei Bet. Response number 82. It's kind of interesting because it's clear that it's a previous letter, and yet it comes up later in the book. So however he edited the book, I don't know the answer to that question, but here's what he says there. So this is part of what I'm doing. Because this tshuva that we're reading is pretty short, I'm going to look at the pieces that he refers to from beforehand and give us a broader perspective of what he was saying rather than just the brief notes that he makes. So there in that tshuva, he says that he thought that in all the places of what we call Har HaBayit, where there's no safek that you can go, there's no doubt that a Jew is allowed to go, even just with the relatively minimal purification of going to mikvah, meaning not having Parah Aduma water sprinkled, there are places where it's clear the Jews are allowed to go, that it's not a question yet. I've mentioned the parts of Har HaBayit that are prohibited. He says that you should go there. You should go to mikvah, and then you should go there. So the person who had been writing him said, well, maybe will people go further than they're supposed to? So aren't you tempting fate, as it were? So Chaim David Levi says, the people who don't care about where they're going, they go anyway today, right? Who are we worried about? There are Jews who sadly don't care about these things, and they might take a Muslim tour, like they may let the tour guided by Arab tour guides will take them all over. Maybe they'll enter, you know, the Dome of the Rock, and they'll enter the Al-Aqsa Mosque, for all I know, and those are certainly parts of the Har HaBayit that Jews shouldn't be going on because of the problems of the Kedusha, the sanctity of Har HaBayit, and their Tumah, their ritual impurity they can't get rid of. But those aren't the Jews who Reb Chaim David HaLevi is addressing, because they don't care about his halachic standards anyway. So the only people who are going to listen to him or paying attention to him are Yirei Hashem v'choshvei Shmo, or people who care about halacha and care about what Hashem wants. So those people will be careful. So if I say to them, or the Jewish tour guide takes them up, says to them, "Here, we don't go beyond here, because beyond here we have some doubt about we're allowed to go. Why would we think that they wouldn't pay attention to us?" So too, he says, the man had raised the question of people won't behave properly in that place, and it's a place of Kedusha, and people won't handle it properly and they won't treat it well. So, and he says, you look at that in the Kotel, you have that at the Kotel as well, right? When you go to the Kotel, there are people who, he doesn't list it here, but, you know, take pictures or this or that. So Reb Chaim David says, again, I don't understand what you're talking about. And when I go to the Kotel, I don't see people who are observant people who are mizalzel b'kedushat haKotel, who mistreat the Kotel. Our eyes see, now he's the Rav in Tel Aviv, I'm not sure how often he got to the Kotel, but he says, our eyes see that all the people who come there to dive into Hashem, to speak before their creator, I think the phrasing is very nice, lishpoch sigam v'sicham lifnei boram, right, to pour out their conversation and their hopes and their fears and their everything they want before their prayer, before their creator in this holy place. They stand there, be'im of a year. They have absolutely the proper attitude towards it. And then if you say, well, what about the regular tourists? So the truth is, the regular tourists, first of all, he says, I don't see them mistreating it so much. This is such an interesting thing, because some of that is a question of, what have I seen? How often am I there? You know, and when I'm there, what do I notice? And also, I think some of that would also depend on, you know, if you see a tourist who shows up, let's say a tourist from Norway, and he or she shows up in immodest dress, whatever it was. So different people react to that differently, or takes pictures, right? Or is pointing, or is why. So the definition of zilzul, mistreatment, is an interesting one. I also think it's interesting to think about whether it's true. Reb Chaim David HaLevi says that this is all he's seen, but is it true that the observant people who come to the Kotel always treat it properly and appropriately? And there, I think there are questions that you could raise as to what's considered proper and appropriate and what's not, and things like that. So, you know, let's say, if I go to the Kotel on a Friday night, a random Friday night, if I have the merit to be in Eretz Yisrael, and let's say it's a time when a lot of people are there, so you found people in the area of the Kotel that's been for davening, you know, greeting each other, seeing people they haven't seen in a long time, having a conversation. So is that appropriate or not appropriate? Or would you say, no, in that place, you're always supposed to be davening? So if you're a person who thinks it's not appropriate and you're all offended by it, and I certainly know people who always talk to me about the fact that they see people davening, talking in shul or bringing food or all sorts of things. I actually was, happened to this year, I was in Israel for Shushan Purim. I had the great joy of being there for Shushan Purim, and I went to the Kotel for Mincha early on the afternoon of Shushan Purim, and there was a man in there, a man with various physical handicaps, so I didn't know his full story, who decided to play music in the area of the Kotel where there are people davening Mincha, and I think he was trying to collect money for it. So me, I thought it was a problem, but I'm not there all the time. I don't know what goes on all the time, so I didn't say anything. And I saw somebody else who seemed to me to be look like a religious man, who just treated like, this is a nice guy, let's be nice to him. So I don't know the standards. So that comes up, therefore, in terms of encouraging people to go up on Har HaBayit, or the parts of Har HaBayit that we think are okay. Same question will come up. This man says, don't you worry about zilzul. Reb Chaim David HaLevi's answer is zilzul, mistreatment. Who do you think I'm talking to? The people who don't care about it. They'll go wherever they want. They'll do whatever they want. The people that I'm talking to are Shomrei Torah Mitzvot, so people who care about Torah Mitzvot. They're not going to mistreat it. Even the Kotel, I don't see them mistreating it. So I think those are interesting questions to come up with. But that was the position of Reb Chaim David HaLevi. He says, and let's say we say don't go up. So the people who you're talking about will go anyway, and they'll go further than they're supposed to go. So we're just hurting ourselves. What are we doing to ourselves by saying, no, you can't go? And then where these should go. And then one more interesting piece that he points out is that even when the Beit HaMikdash was there, and there were times when Chazal, the rabbis at the time, thought that there were problems going on and how people were treating the Beit HaMikdash, they didn't say don't come or don't go. they made takanot, they made rules, they made attempts to find a way to help people not violate things. So one clear example that we all know of is that the source for mechitzot that we have in shul stems from the fact that Chazal saw how men and women were interacting during the smachot Beit HaShoeva, during the celebrations of the pouring out of the water during the holiday of Sukkot. There were these great celebrations every night of Sukkot because you had Nisuch HaMayim, and that was a prayer for rain. The rain was extremely, extremely, even more important than today, was important to people's lives. You had these great celebrations going on. Chazal, at the time, were unhappy about how men and women were interacting. And the Gemara there tells us about the way that they dealt with it. They didn't deal with it by saying women shouldn't come, for example. Right? They didn't deal with it by saying men shouldn't come. They didn't deal with it, right? They dealt with it by saying, okay, here's what we'll do. We'll put the men here and the men and the women there. And that didn't work the first time. So they said, okay, here's what we'll do. We'll put the women here and the men there. And that didn't work. And then finally they came up with the idea of the balcony that became the way they practiced the Simcha Beit HaShoeva. So Chaim Zolotnik's point is, when you see a problem, one option is to try to excise it, try to cut it out and make sure that there's no way that it could be violated. He says, and so the people were saying, don't go to Har HaBayit. We're saying that. Why go to Har HaBayit and have problems and maybe risk people stepping over the line, people mistreating it, people acting wrong? Don't do that. Just say, don't go. So Rav Chaim Zolotnik says that's not our tradition. The tradition is about Har HaBayit. Is that when we see people handling it badly, we try to find ways to make sure that they'll handle it better, but we don't therefore stop them from going and encourage staying away. So therefore, he says, I stay with what I believe. That and by 1984 already, it's true that you're not allowed. Jews didn't have control of Har HaBayit. He says if we had the merit of it, we should try very hard to get control of Har HaBayit again. We should try to make a regular, not just the Jews should go up and visit, not just you should daven while they're there. We should make a makom tefillah there in the place. Meaning, he thinks we should build a shul, as it were, on the place of Har HaBayit, on a part of Har HaBayit that's clear that Jews are allowed to enter, even if they've only just gone to mikvah. If that's all they've done, he thinks we should have built a shul there. Fascinating to me, a fascinating idea from 1984, Chaim Zalman Halevi. That was the first part of the answer to this man's question. The second part of the question was, the father wants cigarettes. So is it a problem with Lifnei Iver? Am I misleading? So Lifnei Iver, let's remember, the literal translation is, don't place a stumbling block before the blind. That's easily understood and clearly understood by halacha to mean that we're not allowed to provide people with opportunities to sin, and that's part of Lifnei Iver. So he says, the truth is, with the cigarettes, it's not going to be Lifnei Iver min HaTorah. It's not going to be a biblical Lifnei Iver, biblical problem of leading somebody to sin, because the Isser D'Oraita, the Torah prohibition, is only where the person who you're going to provide the opportunity to sin could not have gotten that opportunity on their own. The example in the Gemara and the phrase that's very famous is Tre Ibre De Nahara, two sides of a river. The Gemara in Pesachim and Chav Bet Amid Bet, he points out in Avodah Zarah that you have a Nazir, a person who's not a person, a Nazir is a person, a man or a woman, who is a committed to take long on the status of being a Nazir. Part of the status of being a Nazir is that they're not allowed to drink wine. So let's suppose they're on one side of a river, and there's no wine on their side of the river, and there's no way to cross the river, but on the other side of the river, there's wine, and I'm on the other side of the river. If I were to, and they say, oh, please, I just need a glass of wine, please, 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 and I give them the glass of wine, that's a violation of Lifnei Iver. I've just violated, on a Torah level, the prohibition placing them up for the blood. Now, that case, I have to think, is an odd case, because I don't know what it means that there's a river where I can give them the wine, but they can't cross the river. Meaning, if I can reach over and they can take a cup of wine out of my hand, I would think they could jump across the river too. So whatever the answer is to that question, that's the case in the Gemara. Maybe I have a long pole. Maybe I have some kind of a way to shove the wine bottle through the river. Maybe I can throw it. I don't know. Any case. But technicalities aside, the point is clear. In any case where the person who might be led to sin could achieve that sin and secure that sin without me, or that item of sin without me, that is not biblical Lifnei Iver. Right, that's been a Torah. But Tosos right in Shabbos and other places, al kol panim asur b'derabbanan. There is a derabbanan prohibition, which we call misayeya. Misayeya is we're not allowed to help other people commit a sin, even if they can commit the sin on their own. So that's the problem here. So first of all, it would mean then that let's say the father is bedridden, and let's say the father doesn't have other aides in the house, where the father is bedridden in a way where he can't get up and get out, but there's no other help in the house except for this son. Or let's even say that there are aides, but the aides take their orders from the Son, not from the Father. So there it might really be a biblical problem of lifnei iver, that if, assuming, we haven't got to it yet, but we will, assuming that smoking cigarette is a sin, is problematic, is wrong, and Rechayim Dov Halevi takes that for granted, we'll get to it. So then, if the Son helps the Father secure cigarettes, and the Father could not have gotten that on his own, then it's a biblical violation. But let's assume here that the Father's not yet at that level of illness. The Father's just, you know, not planning on going out. He says, oh, can you pick up a pack of cigarettes for me? So that wouldn't be biblical if they were, because the Father can get them on his own, or can call somebody to get them, or they can have them delivered. There's all sorts of, today with Amazon, it can all get delivered. So that wouldn't be a biblical problem. But there is a rabbinic problem of misayeya, that even though somebody can sin without me, I'm not allowed to help them anyway. This raises all sorts of interesting questions. We've seen a couple of times, we just recently saw, you know, I remember these vignettes, but I don't remember what tshuvot they always come from. We saw a tshuva where somebody pointed out that the Vilna Gaon once had, and if you remember it, please email me at grothst@gmail.com. I'll greatly appreciate it. The Vilna Gaon was with somewhere with a person who had abandoned observance and said to the homeowner, the hotel keeper, whoever it was, don't give him any food unless he makes a bracha on it. And the other person said, I'm not even observant at all. The Vilna Gaon says, because you think you're observant, not observant, doesn't change anything. So that question of helping people sin comes up in that context. There's a well-known tshuva of Rosh Hashanah Auerbach, who said, no, he thinks you can, and the point is, it was a novel and interesting innovation of his to say, he thinks you can give food to people you know won't make a bracha for various reasons, and it's not considered misayeya. So that's the issue that's coming up here. It would be considered misayeya to give the father the cigarettes, because you're helping him commit a sin. So that also refers to an earlier response of Rechaim David Alevi's Aseh L'Charav, this volume, no, an earlier volume, this is volume 2, response from 70. Can I take courses? The question is, and the question is it Lifteiver? The question is that a person signed up, one of the consulates in Israel was giving courses in a foreign language, and so the person registered for the course, got to the course, and realized that the teachers were Jewish. They're not observant, but they're Jewish, and that they would likely mark papers on homework papers, like homework assignments, over the course of Shabbat. So can I learn there, since by my learning there, by taking the course and doing the homework assignments and handing them in, am I not causing Chilul Shabbat? Am I not causing Shabbat violation by this other Jew? I think that this is just me talking for a second, just because I have time, because it's a really short Shuvah. So I have a little bit extra time today. We'll probably end early too. And then if that bothers you, then write me an email. If it gladdens you, or send me an email, grothst@gmail.com. So can I learn there? Oh, it reminds me that we are supposed to feel somewhat responsible, not only for our observance, but for our fellow Jews' observance. We live in a time when people like to say, oh, well, if it makes them happy, then it's fine for them, and who am I to judge, and who am I this, or am I that? And that attitude, in general terms, is not a Jewish attitude, not a halachic attitude, because the halachic attitude is that we're supposed to be bothered by others' lack of observance, not in terms of judging them, but in terms of feeling bad that there's less observance in the world and realizing that it affects us because we're all connected in important ways. So we're not allowed to cause other people to sin. We're not allowed to help other people to sin, even if they're going to sin without us. Meaning, even if he said to me, the father's going to smoke as many cigarettes if I don't get them. He'll just be annoyed with the son, but he's going to smoke exactly as many cigarettes as he did. He smokes, you know, a pack a day. That's what he's going to smoke, and he'll get it. Amazon will deliver it. If he doesn't pick them up, he was just asking for a favor, and the son will just be not doing a favor. The answer is, to the extent that it's misayeya, that you're helping out, it's going to be a problem. We'd get there. It's going to be a problem. Here, too, you could say, well, you know, if I don't give in this paper, so there's one less student in the class, so that Jew who is marking papers on Shabbat, so he'll mark 19, the woman, let's say, who's teaching the class, will mark 19 papers instead of 20 papers on Shabbat. So you say, ah, I've reduced, by not going to the class, I've reduced her Shabbat violation. What's she going to do after that? She's going to watch TV. She's going to do this, she's going to do that, she's going to violate Shabbat. So what's the big deal? So the Rav Chaim Dov Halevi's answer is that the Rambam was clear that kol ha-machshil iver ba-davar, anybody who leads somebody who is not aware of a sin, doesn't realize it's sin, is a blind person about that topic, right? Iver doesn't mean blind, physically blind only. It also means spiritually blind to the effects of a certain sin. Or you give somebody a piece of advice that isn't proper, or you are mechazek yidei ovrei avera. This is the Rambam Hilchos Rotzeach in the laws of murder. But at the end of the laws of murder, it's about other stuff as well. Chapter 12, paragraph 14. So, or you're mechazek de'avera, you help other people who commit sins, and that can even sometimes be just encouraging them. That's a whole different topic, not our topic, but something to think about, that our obligation to stand up against sin and to make clear that we in no way support sin, that's what I think sometimes we are not always as aware of today as we might want to be. So these are important general principles, says Rav Chaim Dol Halevi in this tshuva. There are a lot of details about it, and it would at first seem that giving in homework assignments to this woman, to this teacher, male or female, is bichlal isur, is part of this prohibition of misayeya. But he says, well, lifnei iver is only two sides of the river, like we spoke about already. But there's a tosos derabanan, it's even more than that. Then he says, and there's this huge machlokar aposkim, rishonim and acharonim, there's a huge debate about how to exactly put this into practice. So he can't answer it all here. These are very brief tshuvot, as we'll see in a second, because I'll say it now, but he says a few paragraphs. He said the thing, it would take a long time to discuss all this. He was himself certainly a very knowledgeable man, but I can't talk about it at such great length in a radio broadcast. That lets us know that at least some of these tshuvot of Seyed HaRav, many of them, as we've seen, are from letters that he got from people, but others are he had a radio show. This is just like one of those moments where you think, wow, Mika Amcha Yisrael Goy Chavar, what a wonderful place the land of Israel is, the Jewish people are. This was a radio show where he'd get on the radio for I don't know how long. People would call in with questions for the Rav, and he would answer them. Right? People are interested in a halakhic question, he would answer them. And I think that's a beautiful, remarkable thing. Of course, the answers can't be as personal because he doesn't know the situation as well. It's sort of like calling a psychologist on the radio, not Lahavdil, in many, many ways. But he would do it. So that's part of where this comes from. So he can't talk about it fully. He can't quote all the sources. But he says he thinks that it is a problem, misayeya. It is a problem helping her sin or fostering sin in her. We're supposed to, as much as we can, try to prevent our fellow Jews from violating the Torah. Certainly not to lead them to violate the Torah, even if it's Yisrael Mumar, even if it's somebody who's not observant. The fact that they, as I said before from that gra that we saw, even if they think of themselves as having abandoned observance, we're not allowed to foster their further lack of observance, any acts of lack of observance. Topic of its own. But in this case, with the course, he thinks there's an easy head there. There is an easy way to do it. Because in this case, you don't have any reason to be sure that they're going to give in that they're going to mark the homework assignment specifically on Shabbat. So he doesn't say it here, but I'm pretty sure part of what he's referencing is there's a situation where we're allowed to say to ourselves, as long as I've left the person time to do it other times, then I'm not required to think that they're going to do it. Meaning, the fact that the tendency was that people did things on Shabbat because they had time off. If they're not observant, it was a good time to catch up on work. Doesn't obligate me to think about it. If my last class for the week, let's say, is Thursday, and my next class is Monday night, so if I hand the homework assignment on Thursday, I don't have to decide that they're going to do it on Shabbat. It might be they'll do it on Shabbat. It might be that I even have a good reason to think they'll do it on Shabbat. But that's not my problem, I think, in those situations, because I don't have to. That's what he's saying here. I don't have to assume they're going to do it on Shabbat. If I had the homework and assignment Friday afternoon and Sunday morning we had class, that would be more of a problem. In addition, there are poskim who hold, there are authorities who hold, that once somebody is a mumar, once somebody is left observant, sadly, so then the question of misayeya changes, and misayeya, there's still a problem with misayeya, we're still not to help Jews sin, but then it's only bishat avera mamash, it's exactly at the moment of sin, meaning that would still be a question, let's say, for giving them food, where they're not going to make a, that they're going to eat now, they're not going to make a bracha on it, or even better, I'm going to give them food that's non-kosher, they're going to eat because they asked me to, so that would be a problem with misayeya, because I am in the moment of the violation of the Isser. But here, when I give them the homework assignment, it's not Shabbos. So the act of deciding to mark it on Shabbat, that's coming later, and therefore, there are poskim who would say that that's not misayeya, that's not considered halakhically prohibited violation, helping somebody commit a sin with a mumar, with somebody who's abandoned observance. Here's where he says you can't do it all on a radio show, but he thinks you can learn it. He summarizes you can learn in this course, and then he prays that Hashem helps, you know, Hashem helps everybody love and fear Hashem, and all those who have left the Torah, and they come back to observance, etc. So now, coming back to the man with the father and the cigarettes, who can get the cigarettes on his own, he says, it's an Isser de Rabbanan, the Rambam Paskin Hilchos Mamrim, it's in Shulchan Aruch as well. well that if your father tells you, if a parent tells you to violate the Torah, even on a derabbanan level, you're still not allowed to listen to them. So that would therefore mean that with the cigarettes, true, helping him get the cigarettes is derabbanan misayeh, but we're not allowed to violate even a derabbanan, even a rabbinic prohibition, in order to listen to our parents. What our parents tell us in the Torah, we have to not listen. And he quotes a Rav Beit Lechem Yehuda on the Shulchan Aruch with a relatively similar example. He had a man who was ill, and the doctor said to him, you can't eat or drink. I don't know if that was permanently, it doesn't sound like, but let's say for some period of time, and the father gets very thirsty, and he says, you got to give me something, or very hungry, he's got to give me something, and the father says to him, if you don't give it to me, I won't forgive you in this world or in the next world. So the Beit Lechem Yehuda, this commentary of the Shulchan Aruch, says you don't listen to him. Because again, the doctor said you can't do it, then it's a prohibitive person to do it, because generally, we have to listen to our doctors. So that means that this person is not allowed to be eating or drinking at this moment. And therefore, it's prohibited to get the food or the drink for the father. Now, you might say, says Rav Chaim Tel Levi, that's difficult. The father there was already sick. So maybe it's not as clear that cigarettes are a problem. He says, no. This is 1984. Since all doctors have said that smoke is very bad for your health, very dangerous, can kill you in various ways, so therefore it's a problem of nishmartim ma'od l'nafshotechem. There's an obligation in the Torah for us to take care of ourselves, our lives, and our health, and our life in those ways. And therefore, cigarette smoking is clearly a violation of the Torah. And therefore, for this son to give him the cigarettes would be a violation of helping the father, not misayetz rabbanon. We're not allowed to violate the rabbanon, even in response to our parents. That v'nishmatim od l'nafshotechem, I think, can have theoretically broader ramifications, but Rav Chaim Tel Levi doesn't get into that, so we'll skip it. So he says, not only can't you buy the cigarettes, but Rav Chaim Tel Levi says, if you see your father smoking, you have to act as the Shulchan Aruch paskins in terms of what do we do when we see our parents sinning. And this is true even of non-observant parents. So your Shulchan Aruch Yerideya says, if you see your father, a parent, sinning, don't say you're violating the Torah. What you say is, what are we supposed to do? If it's the exact formulation they have the Shulchan Aruch, but the principle is clear, you're supposed to raise it as an issue like the Shulchan Aruch has it as if you're asking a question. Didn't the Torah write? Does it not say in the Torah, not like you're telling him or her what to do, whether they're acting as a halacha, that is a problematic attitude for children to take with their parents because it's a lack of kibbutz avayim, it's a lack of proper awe or fear or honor. And therefore, you raise it as a question, and the Shulchan Aruch says, in a way that the father or the parent understands on their own and doesn't get embarrassed by the way the child is doing it. Our Shulchan adds, if the father doesn't know, if the parent doesn't know what they're doing, so then to ask a question doesn't make any sense, because that'll be at least embarrassed, because you're pointing up, not only are they violating the Torah, you're pointing up their ignorance. So you say, father or mother, this is what I've learned. I learned that this is the way the halacha goes, and then the Aruch HaShulchan says, but the Gemara elsewhere sounds like, if the father is a Rasha, so today the definition of an evildoer who's ignorant as opposed to evildoing, which are very different categories in halacha, is unclear. But if the father is an evildoer, then you're not chayav b'chavo, and then you in honor, and then you can just say to them, you're not doing the right thing, and say to them, you're violating the Torah, but we have to try to stop even our parents from doing so. And if they're not a Rasha, but they're also not good people, and therefore there's no convenient way to raise the issue with them, or let's say the parent is drunk, right? So then the Aruch HaShulchan says it's better to stay away, because you're not allowed to watch them by the throat without saying something, but you don't have any good way to do it, to say something to them, and therefore the Aruch HaShulchan's recommendation, the Rambam has written recommendation elsewhere, is to stay away. On the other hand, Kibbutz Avayim does not push aside any mitzvah in the Torah, any derabbanan, even by not doing something. The parents say, just don't do this. So by not doing something, you're failing to keep a derabbanan. You would not be allowed to listen because anything that's against the Torah, where the Torah, there's a pasuk that's a limud in the Gemara, there's a pasuk that says we're not required to listen to our parents. That is all the background sources to what that I found, some background sources that I found to what kind of later saying, and that with his father, with the cigarettes, you should say to him, you know, Abba, you know, there's a mitzvah of the Torah to guard our health, and smoking damages one's health, and with the hope that the father will understand, we'll try to and do make a better job of getting rid of cigarettes smoke. That's true in a lot of other health issues as well, but it's a very difficult thing to try to help other people, even our parents, find their way, especially since we don't always do it ourselves in the right way, find their way to this. But that is the basic attitude that Rav Chaim Tel Levi conveys. And then one last very, very brief point is your third tshuva. He says, I don't see any reason that you have to worry about having two different toothbrushes, one for meat and one for milk. That's a big chashash that maybe I'll brush my teeth with meat, then I'll brush my teeth with milk, and they'll mix, and I'll have been mixing milk to meat. So those are, that is a tshuva of Chaim David Halevi's. Turns out that it took a full time rather than just brief time, even though it was a much briefer tshuva than most. But for the 29th in Nisan, tshuva of Chaim David Halevi about going up to Har HaBayit and how important he thinks that is, using Har HaBayit for prayer, the parts that we're allowed to go to, and about providing or not providing cigarettes to a parent who wants to smoke. Have a great day.